Here is a special reminder for our on-demand and podcast listeners. KFUO will be celebrating our worldwide ministry with Charathon 2016, a three-day live event Thursday, April 21st through Saturday, April 23rd. Listen on our worldwide stream and on AM 850 KFUO in St. Louis. Join us and enjoy all the live fun, plus hear from some of your favorite on-air friends. Again, Charathon 2016 is April 21st through April 23rd. If you can't listen live during our 3 days of Charathon, remember you can support us online anytime at KFUO.org. Just click a Give Now button on our website, or you can email us and ask us about other giving options. Email gifts at KFUO.org. It's KFUO supporters like you who make these worldwide online programs possible. Please prayerfully consider supporting KFUO today. And thank you for listening and supporting KFUO.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. How do we approach politics and voting? How do different generations approach it? How do Christians approach it? What shapes our worldview and our views on politics? Well, we're going to address that today. First up, we'll take a look at how different generations' views, the generalized views regarding politics and values, what shapes those? We'll talk about that with Reverend Dr. Terry Dittmer. He's Senior Director of Youth Ministry, with a Youth Ministry Specialist with the LCMS Office of National Mission. And in the second half, we'll take a look at how Christians approach voting and beyond the booth, the voting booth. We'll talk about that in an upcoming presentation with the Village Lutheran Lectures. Lectures, villagelectures.com is the website. We'll talk about their upcoming lecture on how Christians approach politics. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin on our website. Just go to KFUO.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin. Joining me in studio today, the Reverend Dr. Terry Dittmer. He's Senior Director, Youth Ministry Specialist in the LCMS Office of National Mission. Dr. Dittmer, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thanks.
Good to have some time to visit with you. You're my go-to person when I have questions about different generations. I know you just you love reading about and studying about different generations, and always have the information about those general ideas about each generation.
Yeah, some people wonder whether it's really a science or if it's just a stab in the dark, but there do seem to be some general characteristics about what have been identified as four generational types.
And what are those? Let's review. It's been a while since we've talked about the different generations.
Interesting to me is that the demographers and the folks who talk about generational stuff are now starting with the silence as the oldest generation. There are still a few GIs generation around, but the silent generation is what would be called an artist type. They are quiet, unassuming, cooperative, sensitive. They're not risk takers. They're not boat rockers. They look to build consensus. And some of the folks that I know who are silent, of the silent generation, generally fall into those categories. They would really like all sides of an issue to feel good and feel comfortable, and they will do what they can to see that everybody feels good about what's going on. The silent generation is born between 1924 and 1945. So, and there hasn't been a lot of press about them,
right?
With the GI generation, which won World War II, and then the boomers, and we boomers, we believe that we are the best generation that ever lived, and we will go to our graves saying that. I think. So the silent generation largely got taken out of the conversation until now.
It's because they were silent?
or did circumstances make them out that
right.
way? I don't know the answer to that one. I just find it fascinating that suddenly everybody's talking about the silence, as particularly in terms of what generations are alive today. Mm-hmm. After the silent generation is the boomer generation, dated 1946 to 1964. We're just great, and we don't mind people knowing that we're a prophet, what is called the prophet type of generation. We tend to be indulged as children, somewhat narcissistic, principled, moralistic. We take up causes, and if you look at especially the early boomers, we were known for the causes we took up in the late 60s and 70s, the war in Vietnam, racism, sexism. That generation took up those causes. It has been said that as boomers aged into their 30s and 40s, the cause they took up was their own wealth. Because they began to see a need to support the lifestyle to which they had become accustomed and to have some savings for retirement. So that gets a little bit at that narcissistic kind of thing. A prophet generation also tends to be religious. And to some extent, you can see where boomers are going back to church or at least reconnecting with faith, maybe not going to church every Sunday, but they do tend to be religious. After the prophet generation is Gen X. This is a nomad generation. There's a great word that describes them. It's picaresque. Not a word that we probably use very much, but it means edgy. And these are no-nonsense, hands-on kinds of people who like to get the job done. They don't care for process so much as just getting the job done. Nike had the perfect phrase for them, sure. Just do it. And they tend to conflict with the boomers because boomers love process, and Generation X, roughly born 1965 to 1982. One thing that society did with Gen X, they're also called the latchkey generation because they were the ones whose moms and dads weren't at home, and when school was over, they made their way home, found the latchkey or found the key under the mat, let themselves in, fixed themselves a snack. To some extent, they weren't supported in the way maybe that we would like to think children were supported. It's also curious, in the early 60s, I think it was about 1963, the pill became legal. In 1982, this is the bookends. So those Gen Xers born in 62, 63 marks the beginning of when people could choose not to have them. 1982, Congress passed a law that made all children born after 1982 eligible for Medicare, but they grandfathered no children in before that, so it's another signal that this was not a particularly supported generation. 1973, abortion became legal, so right in the middle of this generation, there's another mm-hmm. flag. So to some extent, Gen Xers have grown up with the idea that maybe they're not a wanted group of people. At least that's the signals. Those are the signals that they were getting in their formative years. After Gen X comes the millennials, and now suddenly everybody seems to have discovered the millennials. Everybody's talking about the millennials, I suppose because they've entered the economy of the country. They're the youngest workers. They are the same generational type as the GI generation. So they're institution builders. They have a lot of civic energy. They embrace the latest technology. They like working together. They are in turn, well, it's too complicated probably to speak to here, but they're boots on the ground in a war.
Okay.
The youngest folks, if there's some kind of crisis that needs to be addressed. And then there are kids coming after them. The millennials are 1983 to 2000-ish, about 2002 probably. And the next generation, which entered confirmation class the last couple of years. So the leading edge are eighth graders, roughly. And they have been called the plurals, although that hasn't been settled yet. But it seems to be a good name for them. One of the interesting characteristics is by 2019, they will be less than 50% white. They're a very diverse generation already, with a ethnic and racial personality that the rest of the country doesn't have. Although, by 2024, the whole population will be less than 50% white, which is kind of an interesting demographic.
You mentioned that the millennials are similar to the GI generation. Do these generational groups, is there a cycle? So would the plurals be perhaps similar to the silent generation?
The plurals, yes, definitely. And we can see that, well, we can see what, like where the millennials and the GIs are similar.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things is the whole matter of institution building or institutional connections. When the GIs came back from the war, they built the suburbs, they built huge churches, they built institutions, they joined things like the Lions and the Rotary and expended civic energy. To some extent, we can see millennials are beginning to do the same thing. And when we get to talking about millennials and politics, some of the things that they subscribe to will require a bigger government, one of the main institutions in our society. If they're going to be successful, government will have to probably become bigger, unless the rest of us don't.
what are the characteristics of the millennials that are related to politics, their values that are related to politics?
Well, some would say simply because millennials right now are the youngest adults, the youngest part of the adult population. Some would say just because they're young, they're going to be more liberal and they then tend to be tend to be Democrats,
mm-hmm.
or identify with the Democratic Party. And then the older you get, one school of thought is the older you get, the more inclined you are to become conservative and therefore identify with the Republicans. The Pew Research Center did a study of that, though, and it says it's really a lot more complicated than young equals liberal and old equals conservative. For example, they say the youngest American adults, 19 to 29 years old right now, Pew calls them the young outsiders. All of a sudden, this generational stuff gets very complicated because Pew is saying there's probably a subtype of the oldest and a subtype of the youngest and probably a subtype in the middle. They didn't identify what the subtypes were, but they did say that the oldest millennials had a tendency to favor limited government, which would be a Republican trait, but they are socially liberal, which would be a Democratic trait. And in my mind, Pew Research just confused all kinds of things. Because my notes are going to have to get increasingly longer and longer.
Is there a generation that, or as we see the, you know, with each subsequent generation, how they approach politics and voting, or as you've mentioned, civic energy, you know, in civic involvement, do we see that decreasing or increasing, changing with each generation?
To the extent that they are becoming or are political,
or even, you know, viewing voting as their civic duty.
Well, I don't know if they see it as their civic duty, but I do. If something catches their fancy or their attention, for example, everybody observed that Barack Obama was elected president, largely because the youngest voters supported him so strongly. Somewhere I've got that statistic, but his election and re-election can be traced to the huge numbers of young adults who went to the polls. The same thing is being applied to Bernie Sanders and the millennial population that's supporting him. He touches on nearly every issue that is of a concern, and he's captured the imagination of largely the younger millennial voting constituency.
What are some of those key issues that seem to be very popular among millennials?
One is raising up diversity, racial and ethnic diversity. That just is something that the millennials and the plurals will see as a part of their world. They see it as a part of their world. For those of us in the church, they notice that we're not as diverse as their world is, and they want to know why. And how do we celebrate that and lift that up positively? Sanders has a plank for Medicare-style health insurance for the whole population. He would insure everybody. Well, for young adults who are struggling with the Obamacare requirement for insurance, that resonates positively. The whole matter of free tuition for young adults who are struggling with education, college debt, that's a big one. There are environmental concerns. There's raising the minimum wage to $15, and young adults see that as an issue. Pay equity of women with men is an issue. Tax reform. Sanders' platform, to me, implies much higher taxes. That's the government is a huge institution. That's probably the one that says millennials are true to their generational type, because for all these things to happen, the government will be required to support them. And that's when he says 1% of the population reaps 99% of the benefits in the society. The young adults respond positively to Sanders' chiding in that way.
What about these older generations? What about the Gen Xers, the Boomers, the Silent Generation? How what are their attitudes toward politics and voting?
Well, the younger you are. Despite what I said earlier, the younger you are, the more you tend to be Democratic. The older you are, you tend to be or become Republican. The 51% of the current millennials identify or lean towards being Democratic. 35% lean towards Republican. Now, the other generations, so the Silent Generation, they're 47% identify or lean Republican. So that's just almost exactly the opposite. The millennials are more strongly Democratic. Silents are more Republican. Boomers are 45% Republican, 43% Democrat. So almost a kind of even split. Gen X, 47% Republican, 42% Democrat. And it's probably more an issue of identify with. Doesn't mean that they're signing up and getting their Republican or Democratic membership cards.
Do we know of these generations who's more motivated to vote? Who's showing up in the polls? Who's showing up to vote?
Well, it's always the older person or the older population. That was very true of the GI generation. It's true of the civic silent generation, in part because they do have that civic connection, institutional connection. Baby boomers at this point are probably fairly active in terms of voting. The surprise is when the millennials went to the polls when Obama was elected the first time. That was a seismic shift in the way the general population usually voted. And that shift gets the credit for a lot of what's behind his election. It would be the same thing would be true if Bernie Sanders would be elected, or the fact that he's winning all of these primaries and caucuses. It's the younger person who's voting for him. There's a part of me that wonders if it's just not also partly due to the fact that Sanders is somebody new and
unheard of before,
unique. And there's also part of me wonders if he has some attraction like a nice grandpa. Because when you look at the youngest voters, 18, 19, 20 years old, and Sanders as a candidate, there's a huge age gap, but not necessarily a personality or personality conflict in terms of grandpa and grandchild. And
yeah, AP Radio News just reported today the who's of the candidates right now. How they're doing in terms of likability, you know, that with what were the Republican views on Trump, and it was pretty low in terms of likability, you know, whether they liked or they would be happy with him as president, or dissatisfied or angry, and same for Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and the you know how Democrats were responding. The numbers were pretty low in terms of likability. The only one that had any substantial numbers in terms of likability was Bernie Sanders with the Democrats.
I think politicians are also learning that there's no such thing as an entitlement. Just Clinton would be one of those people who learned the hard way when was it Gloria Steinem and Madeleine Albright came out and lifted her up as a great campaigner for women's rights. And there were lots of young women who were very critical that she should feel entitled to their vote just because they were women. I do think the young adults, probably the general population, may be looking at the issues more closely than they have in the past. Ironically, there Pew did a study of the evangelical connection to the election process, and you hear a lot about what candidate is the most attractive to the evangelical audience. The evangelical audience is not, according to the Pew research, is not paying attention. It's like in the low 20% that whether they care about it or not. So nobody should think that they've got a corner on the vote market.
Yes, it's I haven't looked at the history of elections, but it seems like this is quite a unique election year. Campaign year.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I appreciate all the information you share from time to time. Now, granted, I realize the, you know, as we look at this information, that doesn't mean that every millennial will vote this way or every Gen Xer will vote this way. But these are tend to be characteristics of these generations.
Right. They will look for a candidate whose attitudes and ideas match theirs or are close to theirs. They won't find the perfect candidate. None of us will find the perfect candidate. But I think it's helpful to know what we do believe and what we do stand for. And vote accordingly.
Well, thank you. The Reverend Dr. Terry Dittmer, Senior Director, Youth Ministry Specialist in the LCMS Office of National Mission. Thanks for being my guest today, helping us look at these different generations.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll learn more about the next lecture in the Village Lutheran Lecture Series on Christianity and Culture coming up on April 30th. We'll talk with the Reverend Dr. Matthew Harrison, Tim Gegline, and the Reverend Dr. Kevin Golden about that upcoming event. And also want to remind you about Share-a-thon 2016 coming up April 21st through the 23rd. You can learn about being a partner with Worldwide KFUO and as we embrace the future. You're listening to Faith and Family on the Messenger of Good News, Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
Do you believe that KFUO and the Worldwide Proclamation of the Gospel is worthy of your support? KFUO will be celebrating our worldwide ministry with Share-a-thon 2016, a three-day live event Thursday, April 21st through Saturday, April 23rd. Listen on our worldwide stream and on AM 850 KFUO in St. Louis. Join us and enjoy all the live fun, plus hear from some of your favorite on-air friends. Again, Share-a-thon 2016 is April 21st through April 23rd. If you can't listen live during our 3 days of Share-a-thon, remember you can support us online anytime at KFUO.org. Just click a Give Now button on our website, or you can email us and ask us about other giving options. Email gifts at KFUO.org. It's KFUO supporters like you who make these worldwide online programs possible. Please prayerfully consider supporting KFUO today. And thank you for listening and supporting KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are discussing the things you don't talk about, religion and politics. It's a fun day here at the studio at Worldwide KFUO on Faith and Family. We're talking about how generations and different generations approach politics and now how Christians approach politics. And that's the topic of the next Village Lutheran Lectures on Christianity and Culture. That's the next lecture coming up April 30th at Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. And the presenters, the speakers for this next lecture, beyond the voting booth, the Reverend Dr. Matthew Harrison and Tim Gegline are the presenters for this next lecture. Joining me in studio now, the Reverend Dr. Kevin Golden. He's senior pastor at Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. Dr. Golden, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Always good to be with you.
We always have great chats. You always bring great topics to us for Faith and Family, and Village does a nice job with the lecture series, which always relate to what we're talking about here on Faith and Family as well.
Well, it's nice how things dovetail so well, and we're blessed to be able to offer this to the community as a whole.
What a unique topic. What a great topic. Beyond the voting booth, how does a Christian approach politics? I think it's, you know, we're always told, you know, things that you don't talk about, religion and politics, that you never talk about, at least in a public setting, right?
Right, right. But obviously, one of the reasons why we have this going at this particular time is because we are in a major election year. with the presidential election and all the other lower items on the ticket and such taking place. So it's something on our minds. But even as the topic, the theme indicates, this is beyond the voting booth. So we're not really looking within this for our speakers to endorse anybody or and such, but rather to help remind us of, as Christians, how do we approach the whole issue of politics so that we're balancing between our calling as citizens of a nation and state, but then also our greatest calling, our highest calling that oversees every calling we have, and that is our calling as a Christian.
Well, you were able to line up great talent, knowledge, expertise for this, both Reverend Dr. Matthew Harrison, our president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and he also happens to work with you too.
He's assistant pastor at Village. So I, as the senior, I came to him and said, "You shall do this," and he had no choice but to do it. Yes.
And what better voice for this topic as well? Tim Gegline, vice president for external relations at Focus on the Family, and senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C. Tim is our go-to for all kinds of important matters when it comes to what's going on in our nation's capital. And so he's on the phone joining us now. Tim Gegline, thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Well, it's a real pleasure to be here. It's nice to be back, Randy. And Kevin, I look forward to seeing you and all the good folks in Ladue very soon.
I always appreciate the work that you do in Washington, D.C., in our nation's capital, to help provide us a view of what's going on when it comes to political matters and what we can do as Christians to stay informed and to be proactive when it comes to the topics that are important to us.
Well, may I say, these days here in Washington, the inbox is never empty. You know, you get up in the morning and you say, "Oh my gosh, what's ahead of us today?" And may I say, gentlemen, you're never disappointed, because it you know, when it comes to all of the things that we as Lutheran Christians and Christians in general hold dear, it is remarkable the sort of daily assault in this confluence of culture and politics, which have so informed the issues of marriage and life and our religious liberty. And there's a lot of people who feel very discouraged. They feel in despair. I do a lot of traveling in behalf of Focus on the Family. And the thing that I hear more often than anything else, and I think that this fits in so beautifully with our upcoming series in Ladue, is not, you know, who should I vote for or what is your view of this policy. What I hear more often than not from fellow Christians is I feel very discouraged and despaired. I am concerned about the country for my children and my grandchildren. And the third thing, which fits in so beautifully with our conversation this morning, is that I hear people say, "And I don't know what to do." It's that last part that I think is so difficult, because, you know, we all know that as Christians, it's a sin to be discouraged. It's a sin to feel despair, because it negates the hope of Jesus Christ. Yet in the practical world, the question is, but what are we to do? How are we to think about the social and moral revolution that we are living through? And, you know, those are all very good and fair and, may I say, excellent questions.
Tim, you brought up a good point that parents and grandparents are, you know, quite frequently concerned with what we leave behind for our next generation. What are we doing that shapes that next generation? I'm curious for you, what was the worldview in which you grew up regarding politics? What were the philosophies or the approach to politics in which you grew up?
Well, you know, I've written a book about this. You know, in my growing up, by and large, my parents, both of whom are cradle Lutherans, by and large, ours was not a political home. You know, we did have the very occasional political conversation, but may I say, I think that that's very common in Lutheran homes. You know, yes, some homes, you know, where politics is spoken about more often, but often it's the busyness of life. You know, these days, the way that I was raised, people are busy. They're working. They're trying to, you know, pay their mortgage and you know, support their children. And they're concerned about their schools. And, gee, if you get around to politics, that seems, you know, rather a luxury. But I have to say, I came to see, and my parents, you know, and I, you know, are very much of a piece in this regard. We came to see that, you know, that ignoring what is going on in the public square, being indifferent or semi-indifferent to what's going on in the public square, especially now, is really a dereliction of duty. You know, it negates in a very strong view what we as Christians are to be. Our first duty as Christians living in a country like this is to vote. And how do you make a good vote? How do you reason and discern the right way forward? You have to be informed and you have to pay attention. And for those who are sort of turned off by politics, you know, it's easy to you know, snap off the television, put down the paper and say, I'm tired of it. You know, I don't want to hear any of it. And I feel very strongly, Randy, that that instinct is the one that needs to be overcome, because we need Christians more involved in the public square now more than ever. We need Christians better informed about what's going on in the public square now more than ever. This is no time for retreat. This is a time for engagement.
Dr. Golden, you know, Tim brought up a good point. Many mm-hmm. families, many Lutheran families, many Christian families tend to be non-political, especially mm-hmm. at home, yeah. Especially around kids. Your thoughts, what was your childhood like when it comes to political matters?
Well, this can often be the knock against Lutherans, is at least in America and in more recent generations, is a kind of a quietism that we're not vocal on these matters. But that certainly is not the history within Lutheranism. If you even go to the early Lutherans, they were rather, well, Luther himself, rather bold and outspoken regarding the political affairs of the day and the leaders and about whether they were right and wrong and such. And so this is something we ought and can recapture. Certainly, I would say, what Tim described is very similar to the way that I was raised, that, you know, I know my parents, they were faithful in voting. They didn't talk a great deal about it in the home or at the dinner table or something like that. They did instill certain morals within us. And probably now I have a whole lot more conversations, if you will, political conversations with my parents and such. We're kind of on the same page because a lot of our political decisions are really driven by our values. And we share the same Christian values and such. But it's certainly something that the church can do a better job of. But as we mentioned before, while we don't want to go the way of quietism, on the other hand, the Christian approach isn't necessarily to for me from the pulpit to stand up and endorse a specific candidate. I don't do that. Now, if you want to sit down and I take off my collar and you want to talk with Kevin, I'll give you my opinion about who you ought to vote for and such. But I will speak from the pulpit, and I have, on specific issues that we have to address that are political issues, but they're also issues that God's word speaks to very clearly. And so therefore, our calling as Christians is to approach them from the basis of God's word and not just from my own personal opinion.
Tim, who are the people that have shaped your views today when it comes to politics? Who or what are the things that have shaped your views on politics?
Well, I had very good mentors in my young life, and I'm very happy to say that as a young boy, a very close friend of mine asked me, had I ever read National Review magazine? And I had never heard of National Review. He introduced me to really the great thinking and analysis of great men of letters like William F. Buckley Jr., like Russell Kirk, like T.S. Eliot, and I could go on and on. I was also blessed with grandparents who loved to read, and they taught me the centrality of the moral imagination. This is a wonderful phrase that comes from the Irish statesman Edmund Burke, who said that it was very important that before politics, that we understand the power of culture. Culture leads, and politics is downstream from culture. And I think that this kind of thinking had a great impact on me as a young boy and as a young man.
So how then do Christians approach politics? How do we approach voting? How does your faith, how do the scriptures inform what you think and how you vote?
Well, may I say, one of the books that I recommend very strongly to my Lutheran brothers and sisters and to Christians who do not share our denominational identification is a remarkable book by the late, great Chuck Colson called The Faith. Chuck was a mere Christian, very similar to C.S. Lewis. And although I am, you know, boundlessly, in gratitude to C.S. Lewis, you know, I'm decidedly not a mere Christian. But Lewis's book, Mere Christianity, needless to say, is one of the great Christian apologetics, you know, of the 20th century. But Chuck Colson's book, The Faith, does something that is very difficult to do, to go back to where we began this discussion, which is that it begins to talk about how important it is to form and to have a worldview. A worldview which can be Christian, a worldview which can be something, you know, quite, you know, a posit to the Christian worldview, but everybody has one. And I think when it comes to the question of how do I reason this public, square argument, how do I think about the issue of abortion? How do I think about the issue of marriage? How do I think about the issue of religious liberty and the rights of conscience? But also, what do I think about the size and scope of government? What do I think about how a Supreme Court justice, you know, ought to be selected? You know, how do I navigate my way through the cultural tides, which are often in opposition to what I believe? Chuck Colson, in his book, The Faith, does a wonderful job of talking about this and giving us a way to think about it. May I say, one of the things that is most attractive about Chuck's thesis is how important Luther is and was in his thinking in this regard. Luther's very famous construction of the kingdoms of the left and the kingdoms of the right. Chuck spoke at length about the kingdoms in conflict. This goes back to what Pastor Golden was speaking about just a little while ago. We are, as Christians, citizens of two places, ultimately of heaven, but also in the public square. This is our country, our beloved country, and what is it that we owe to our country? You know, this kind of thinking is, I think, a wonderful way to start when it comes to developing a worldview and sharing with our children about how to think about these very large issues.
And it's this very theology that I know Pastor Harrison is going to be particularly fleshing out for us on April the 30th, is the matter of what is often referred to as the two kingdoms theology, which is Christ rules and reigns in this world through his left hand, which is about order and maintaining order and such. And then also he rules and reigns through his right hand, which is his hand of grace and mercy and forgiveness. And those somewhat loosely, but not perfectly, go to the left hand is largely about what God, what Christ does through the government, which he himself establishes in order to maintain order. Then also with his right hand, largely through the church, both corporately but individually as Christians, about delivering forgiveness. And so Pastor Harrison's going to flesh that out in many ways theologically, and I'm anticipating, I don't want to speak for him, but I think Tim is going to be helping to flesh that out in more down-to-earth terms about how that actually works in our world today.
As his senior pastor, did you review his theological writing to make sure that it
was... He still owes a copy of his manuscript to me.
Tim, what are you looking forward to discussing or presenting in this lecture coming up on April 30th?
What I am most interested in doing is talking about how a Christian should think about and navigate the public square in the 21st century. we are living in a time of moral relativism and a time of cultural nihilism. We are in the process, in our remarkable country, of exchanging the Judeo-Christian culture for a culture of nothingness. And how do we think about these issues specifically with regard to the millennial generation, those who are, relatively speaking, between the ages of 18 and 29? How do we reach this generation? This is very important for all that we believe. You know, whoever wants this generation is going to get them. And the question is, how intentional are we being about this? You know, we have the most beautiful theology in the world. We serve, you know, the greatest God who there ever could be, a God who never gets tired of forgiving us, a God who never gets tired of loving us, a God who is always there. How do we take the centrality, the immutable, you know, principles that guide our lives, and how do we share that for a new generation in a new culture? We have to make it new, and I'm going to discuss you know, what the sense and what the nature of these issues is in the public square in a way that is timely and relevant to the era and the culture in which we find ourselves.
You talked about, and I just talked with Terry Dittmer about this too, how different generations approach politics and voting. Now, your audience on the 30th, it could be a very mixed audience in terms mm-hmm. of generations, mm-hmm. anywhere from that older silent generation, boomers, Gen X, millennials, maybe a few plurals. Well, some of the confirmation students mm-hmm. might be there. But, you know, if you were speaking to one specific generation, if you were talking just to millennials, Tim, would that shape how your presentation begins and ends?
You know, it would. I speak on college campuses in the academic year about every 2 weeks. And in fact, you know, I go everywhere, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Brown, Grove City, the Concordias, et cetera. And I have found that this is a generation that is not of one piece. It's not monochromatic. It doesn't, you know, think all the same way. And very often, one of the problems is that millennials are put into that kind of box, that they're all of one piece, that they, you know, that they really only think about the world in one way. And I think it's very important to those of us, you know, who love the millennials and who are working to shape this generation, that we understand that distinction. I think that that's first. But secondly, I think that the millennials, Randy, they're impatient for all the right things. They've lived through a lot of things. They've lived through a remarkably broken culture of marriage. They've lived through a broken culture of family, marriage, parenting. They've lived through an abortion culture. We've had nearly 60 million abortions since 1973. To give people a perspective, you know, that's the entire population of the United States west of the Mississippi, plus all of Italy, you know. And so this generation has only, by and large, known the United States at war. And all of this kind of fractured view has heavily impacted their own worldview. And so how we speak to them about matters of the heart, how we speak to them about these issues in the public square, we have to be nimble about it, and we have to be comfortable that there is a generational mix that is not like their parents and like their grandparents. I'm the father of two millennials. They're wonderful Christian young men. And I believe that great days are ahead for our country. I truly believe that. But at the same time, I believe that the way in which idiomatically and culturally that we approach this generation, we have to be careful and we have to do it right. And I think that is very important, specifically for those of us in the Missouri Synod. You know, we have to be very careful, and we have to weigh our words in a way that is very different from even the generation before.
Dr. Golden, this event, the next lecture coming up April 30th, Saturday, April 30th, 2 p.m. at Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. This is one in the series, and,
yes.
And every lecture in the series, you usually have a number of things going on, sometimes before, after, a reception after.
Yes.
After the engaging presentation from Dr. Harrison and Tim Gegline that day, will there also be other activities?
Yeah. So from 2 to 4 is the, if you will, the lecture time, and really both presenters will be presenting for about 45 minutes each, and we'll have half an hour of Q&A so people can have an opportunity to needle them with a few questions and such. And then at 4 o'clock, we'll have a reception, so enjoy some live music. We have a harpist that will be with us. We'll have, we always have some kind of visual art as well, so we have an art display by artist Renee Erickson. Then we'll also have a book signing with both Pastor Harrison and Mr. Gegline, where if you own one of their books, you can have them sign it, but we'll also have some of their books available for sale on the spot, so you can pick up a book and have them sign it. And I would encourage all of our listeners, this is Worldwide KFUO, I don't expect all your listeners will be able to drive into St. Louis on that day, but we do have a videographer who videos the lecture for us and then processes it, cleans it up, makes it really nice. It usually takes about a month before it's available, but then we post it on our website so that people can watch it and rewatch it to glean from the wisdom. And so if you want to see that, plan on about a month later, late May, they'll be available on villagelectures.com. That's the website, villagelectures.com. And we've got all of our past lectures on there as well, which have kind of a host of different topics that have been addressed.
Well, it I'm certain will be a very engaging event, very helpful event, and this isn't really targeting any specific age group or generation, as we were
Correct.
Talking about earlier. This can be from that older generation on down to those plurals, those 12 and 13 year olds, as we're helping them learn how to approach these.
Nor
topics.
Are we really looking to pinpoint any
sure.
specific. Political group, if you will, but rather this is speaking to Christians about how do you approach the issue of politics, not just for how you make decisions on who you're going to vote for, but even beyond the voting booth, how do you approach politics in general and making decisions throughout the year about communicating with your elected representatives and others on these very matters.
Our guest today, Timothy Gegline, Vice President for External Relations at Focus on the Family, Senior Fellow at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., and presenter at the next Village Lutheran Lecture coming up on April 30th. Tim, thanks so much for being our guest today.
It was a real pleasure. Thanks so much.
Look forward to having you in St. Louis soon. Safe travels. The Reverend Dr. Kevin Golden, Senior Pastor at Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri, thanks so much for sharing this with us, sharing the story, and all the work you do to keep these lectures going. These are great.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word, the Reverend Jolly John Lukomsky filling in today for Pastor Whedon. Stick around. You're listening to Worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.